This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. Days after the death of George Floyd, while in police custody in Minneapolis, Chattanooga Police Chief David Roddy posted on Twitter, quote, "If you wear a badge and you don't have an issue with this, turn it in," unquote. On Friday afternoon, I spoke with Chief Roddy about the steps that his department has taken since the protests here in Chattanooga against police brutality and the calls for systemic change.
Chief Roddy, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Walk us through how Chattanooga Police Department is reviewing its policies at this time. You have made some announcements in the past week. There are other things you no doubt are considering, but walk us through the process a little bit.
Most of the focus we have now has the genesis being not only what we're hearing from our community here in Chattanooga, but what you hear in a national conversation. And probably one of the more concise documents that has brought concerns and questions from communities across the country is the 8 Can't Wait. And so we went in and looked at those 8 tenets. And upon review of those, we found that we had documented language actually addressing 7 of the 8 already within our policy. But that is where we are now. So we took the 8th one that we really didn't have specific language, which was the duty to intervene. And we added that language specifically into a section of our policy for officers to understand the expectations of this agency, but also the expectations of the community. But when I released it, I was also very careful to make sure that Chattanooga understood that that wasn't, officers weren't doing that. And then now we have to tell them they have to do it. That's how I've seen police officers act in this job for the 25 years I've been in here. But it's I believe that your policy is your strongest message to your community. And when you put things in an expectation or a practice in writing, it solidifies that expectation going forward. So that was the intent of getting the duty to intervene in our policy was, I don't know how much behavior it changes, but I believe it helps the community understand what behavior is supposed to be. And relative to the other 7, everything from the use of chokeholds, which have never been permissive in the Chattanooga Police Department, they haven't been taught in my 25 years here, they're not considered an improved method for response to resistance. So by a use of force, if it's not listed as approved, then it is by proxy prohibited. We don't teach it. We don't train on it. If you use it, generally, you're going to be outside of policy for that. And that tenet stays same for the rest of them as you move through down through the list. So everything from announcing your presence in law enforcement when possible prior to using deadly force to the required use of force reporting, which our officers are, all of those are addressed. So our review process right now is not starting at a zero. It's trying to figure out what the language looks like in our policy, and is there a stronger way to phrase it? Is there a more affirming way to make sure that both officers and communities together have the same expectation and the understanding in our policy?
And then there's also the pledge put forward by former President Obama. That's another piece of this when it comes to policy, reviewing policy, adjusting and articulating policy.
Yes, absolutely. And I think the national conversation that comes with that will give us all in law enforcement and across the country and all of our cities and communities an understanding of what that review looks like. There are over 18,000 law enforcement agencies in the United States. So trying to get to a standardized way to state a piece of policy to match 18,000 individual communities, because policy is generally driven by what a community's understanding is. I can write all the national policies I want, but if I don't involve my community in what those policies and procedures look like, including the legalities that are attached to that, then I'm going to miss the mark in the understanding of that policy. So I think the national conversation helps us understand what that expectation is, and then we start to have the local conversations to go along with that, and we figure out what Chattanooga's language looks like to meet what that conversation is occurring across the country.
Sticking with language, I'm struck by in the national conversation, we have heard phrases such as defund the police, dismantle the police. The activists here in Chattanooga who have been out in the streets, you've heard and seen some of that. You know that because you've been out there yourself. But in the list of demands that they had put forward recently, they didn't state that. They stated divest and reinvest. I'm just wondering, as a law enforcement officer, you and the officers you engage with on whatever level, when you hear that language, what do you think?
I think the first part of the conversation is what started the divide. When you hear the word defund the police department, I think many people believe that that means do away with the entire budget, dismantle the police department and do away with it. There's no need for law enforcement in our community. And I do not believe that that is what, and I don't want to put a percentage on it by speculation, but I don't believe that's what people are really looking for. I think that people have an interest in, and an expectation of money going into areas, into social service and support of the community to move individuals out of the path of law enforcement much earlier in the game. And I don't know of any police officer that's going to say no to that. But what you're getting at in government is you have a finite amount of budgetary resources that can go into different parts of government. So to say you want to divest from the police department, I think is a better term. We still have to get a better understanding from each other what that means. But if you're talking about moving traditional roles that have developed in the last decade, two decades, three decades in law enforcement as an expectation of law enforcement into non-law enforcement roles, that's a conversation I will absolutely engage in. The example that I've had in many conversations, including on the street corners that you mentioned with many of the protesters, is say the Chattanooga Police Department changes flat tires. So anytime a citizen calls in and says there's a flat tire, we respond and help change the tire. If the expectation is you no longer want Chattanooga police officers to change flat tires, then any money in my budget that buys jacks, new tires, road flares, the training that goes to teach officers how to replace flat tires, if all of that is moved into another section of government that maybe are better suited or could be better trained, or people just simply don't want the presence of law enforcement filling that role, then that we need to get into that conversation about what that looks like. But that is a community-wide expectation that must be communicated after that. Because when individuals call into your law enforcement agency and say, hey, I have a flat tire, then you have to have the conversation of, I understand that and we would very much like to help you. However, the police department doesn't change flat tires anymore. So you have to have a resource and an agency and staffing and training and the ability to respond to that need in place before you can remove our ability as law enforcement to take care of it. Otherwise, you create a need gap. And that's where things can get very dangerous and precarious for a community, because individuals will still present with a need and no one has solidified enough in order to be able to take care of that. So I think that's the broader conversation we get into. And I understand individuals' frustration. We want to get it done now. And there are some things that we can do now as a country and as a community, but we can't get all of this done now, especially when you're coming into a budget review at the beginning of a budget that's already been proposed. And then also you have COVID restrictions on already tight resources because of lost revenue coming into many communities across our country. So there are more moving parts to this than simply saying, let's take A out of the police department's hands, all the money that pays for A, we move it over here. We're government. I hate to admit it, we don't move that fast.
And also complicating it is the state of the economy due to the shutdowns to curb the spread of COVID-19. And I asked this of the mayor the other day live on WUTC. When we say make a change in the funding, when we talk about shift funding, when we talk about shifting funding, there are also obligations that the city has, that the department has, whether you're talking about pensions, you're talking about state mandates, or you have federal mandates.
Yes, absolutely. The largest portion of the Chattanooga Police Department budget is salary. It's around 74% to 75% of the entire police department's budget goes to salary, OPEB, pension, benefits, and so forth. With that only leaving about 24% to 26% any given year on an operating cost, and then mixed into that operating cost are areas that are not, they're not really movable. It's everything that keeps our radio systems running. It's the ability to put gas in police cars, keep the lights on in the building that I'm sitting in right now. So it's not necessarily, you don't really have the ability to divest in those areas because there's still an expectation that we have to be present as a law enforcement agency. So, and there may be movable parts in there. That is the broader conversation that I believe our community, Mayor Burke, our members of city council, constituents across there, and me included, that we need to get into right now to figure out, is there another picture in the future? But I think we're very early in that to figure out what that picture is.
We've seen a lot of coverage in the past week or so of other communities that made systemic change in their law enforcement. I'm thinking specifically of Camden, where they did, in that case, eliminate the police department and replace it with a countywide force, and they were able to reduce their level of violent crime substantially. The reason why they took that drastic step was because of corruption. beyond those institutional moving parts, the approaches that are being taken in places such as Camden, the approaches that are being taken out in the streets, what are you looking at out there that other departments might be doing and thinking about incorporating here in Chattanooga? What's worth considering at this point?
Some of the items might already connect into what we do here. We started a victim services unit within the Chattanooga Police Department about 4 years ago, and that is a direct connection to individuals that have been victimized as a result of crime, specifically violent crime. So it's homicides, aggravated assaults, special victims units. And we have a dedicated unit of professional staff members, non-sworn, that engage with those victims from their initial contact with the Chattanooga Police Department to when hopefully we've moved them into a better place. We've supported them along that path. Sometimes that path is very short. Sometimes it's extremely lengthy based on just the judicial process. So being able to give that person that additional supportive shoulder to lean on, but also somebody that is trained in negotiating social services, counseling, substance abuse, whatever those needs present through a case management model. We've been doing that with the Chattanooga Police Department for several years, and we've seen the benefits from that. I believe that we have done an excellent job of supporting those that unfortunately have had a tragic event in their life. And we've actually been recognized as a best case practice in that area from the International Association of Chiefs of Police and other peer agencies. I think getting into that, when you talk about injecting other people that are highly trained on how to provide that type of supportive care, your police officers will still need to respond into some of those instances, if not all of them, just to do the safety assessment. But then maybe there's a way to inject other people that are more trained or more skilled, more supportive in a social services environment, and whether that need has presented itself through substance abuse, trauma-informed care, homelessness, mental health crisis, whatever that specific needs is that may be the genesis for the behavior that we're seeing as law enforcement, that gets us into a pre-arrest diversion program or straight into maybe even not so far as a certificate of need, but directly into some type of mental health support where incarceration is not the best option. Maybe there's a substance abuse need that if it's prolonged out before that is implemented as a ruling in a judicial process, maybe there's a way to on-ramp into that sooner. Anything that gets that additional kind of support out there on the street with the officers, maybe not instead of, because there are still very dangerous, risky situations that individuals could be asked to go into, but maybe alongside of us. We've said for years in law enforcement, some of the most frustrating times is when you show up on a call and you're expected to be a counselor, a pastor, a mentor, a tutor, a coach, fix plumbing, redo electrical wiring, catch the raccoon that's in the basement, everything that law enforcement responds, because we are the 24/7 gate to government. Maybe there are ways to bring other individuals more trained in that specificity alongside law enforcement to where we either step out of that lane sooner because we have the ability to inject quicker, or maybe we just still come along for the safety procedure and someone else can support us in how we're trying to support that member of the community.
You've talked about the national conversation. You've talked about the local conversation between the police and the activists and others in the community. There's also the conversation between Chattanooga Police and Hamilton County Sheriff's Department, and conversation between Hamilton County Sheriff's Department and the people out in the streets and the rest of the community. Where do you think the conversation needs to be between Chattanooga Police, the community, and the Hamilton County Sheriff's Department and all this?
I'm really not sure where that conversation starts. I mean, I think we're the representatives of law enforcement for Hamilton County, the city of Chattanooga. And while we do have a fairly large suburban population, we also have a fair number of people that visit inside the city, frequent inside the city, eat, have a good day of tourism downtown. We're all interconnected in this. So I think us all coming to the table with whether it's individuals that have expressed themselves vigorously over the last few days downtown, or whether it's into just joining and aligning into political conversations, budgetary conversations. Probably one of the things that stretches over all of that is the number of advocacy groups that we have inside the city limits of Chattanooga that also outreach into the county. Those are that cross-sectional member that I was talking about a minute ago of, if we're talking about substance abuse, the Hamilton County Sheriff's Office and the Chattanooga Police Department are probably going to that same supportive advocacy when they see someone that's in that cycle. So I think having those conversations right there, if we're talking about increasing or moving into different social services approach, then I believe the Chatham Police Department and the Hamilton County Sheriff's Department should absolutely be connected on that, because you do not want to send inconsistent messages to individuals that are already in some type of feedback loop, either based on behavior or addiction, trauma, or what is causing it. And then you have one reaction in one place from law enforcement and a different reaction in a different place from law enforcement. That can be very confusing to an individual, especially somebody in crisis.
And what is something that most people not in law enforcement may not know about the work that you're all doing that you have found yourself and your colleagues have found themselves repeating out in the streets in the past few weeks?
A lot of what we spoke to a moment ago, I think, is going to be some of the most frustrating part. And we're working on trying to get as much information out about our department as we can. There was a comment made in one of a social media conversation, and I happened to get it sent over to me, where an individual posted and said, "I wonder if the Chattanooga Police Department has a body-worn camera program." And I literally stopped. I was like, we've had this for 4 years. I don't know how many press conferences and discussions and city council presentations that I have made personally, minus all the ones everyone else has had, talking about how we built our body-worn camera program, how we sought other peer advice, how we scrutinized it as best we could to make sure that it was a strong and lasting policy. We've talked about this, but someone doesn't know we have it. So I do believe as an agency, we have an ownership in trying to remedy that. But then also, as I mentioned before, the Eight Can't Wait campaign, I had that sent to me multiple times in the first few days of here recently. And we were already touching seven of those. That's another example of what we need to do to get our community to better understand how its police department functions. So I think that's the conversation we need to have, but we need to get that out a little bit broader spectrum. And we're working on a platform right now to do that so that we can get as much information out to our community about how our use of force policy works, how our body-worn camera policy works, how internal affairs works, how cases are investigated, direct links over to our policy. So you can simply go into one spot, click the link, and you have our entire policy of how a Chattanooga police officer is held accountable to that standard.
All right. Chief Roddy, thanks so much.
It's my pleasure, sir. Thank you for the time.
Chattanooga Police Chief David Roddy in a conversation recorded Friday afternoon. You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment.
This is Scenic Roots. Good afternoon. I'm Richard Winham. Every Friday at 12 noon, Wood Songs in Dalton features a set by local and regional musicians on their Facebook page. The series is called Quarantunes. A couple of weeks ago, Chattanooga songwriter and singer Anthony Quails was the featured performer. He played a set of songs from his newly released album, The Man I Thought I'd Never Be.
Last year, I was headed to the Blue Ridge area to record a new album, and this song, the title for the song struck me as I was driving through the Ocoee when there's no cell signal. So I had plenty of time to think. So I wrote this song. It's called Give It Time. If your back doesn't ache the moment you wake, and your clothes never go out of style, it's okay, it's all right, just give it time. If the face that you see, the reflection you find, is young and untouched by the worries of life, it's okay, it's all right, just give it time. 'Cause someday the truth might reveal a view from the opposite side. But maybe what will never be clear is the age when you first realize. So if your children are grown and you're feeling alone. Hoping you cross their mind. Wipe the tear from your eye and don't be surprised if they're feeling the same inside. It's okay, it's all right. Just give it time. I wrote that song thinking about getting older. And my kids are grown. My youngest daughter just graduated high school, so she'll be headed off to college in the fall. And my oldest daughter, she'll be in her junior year in college this year. And so I've been thinking about a lot of that since the quarantine took place, and I was kind of asked to stay home for a little while. So I haven't done any shows since the end of February. So I just put out a new record at the first of the year, and of course, all good things happen when you put out a new record. You get a pandemic and you don't get to tour it, so you guys are getting to hear some of these songs before a lot of other folks. It's called The Man I Thought I'd Never Be, and so this is the title track from that record. Hope you guys enjoy. There's a little less hair on the top of my head, and a little more stuck to the sink. Yes, my memory is fading, eyesight is failing, making it easy to see that I'm more like the man I thought I'd never be. My temper is quicker, waistline is thicker, and I'm finding it hard to believe. Yes, I buy shoes made for comfort, 'cause when both your feet hurt, you choose orthopedic relief. Yes, I'm more like the man I thought I'd never be. I'm in more of a hurry, and sometimes I worry when life isn't just as it seems. But not long ago, there was a fork in the road and a change to the way that I think. I'm still scared of the silence, but when it gets quiet, I stay low, I'd much rather leave. And I am more sentimental and tear up a little when my wife and I both now agree that I'm more like the man I thought I'd never be. The man I thought I'd never be. So my wife and I, we celebrated our 15-year anniversary a couple years ago, and I was thinking about, you know, when you first get married, when you're dating, you think about the things that you like about the other person. Then you get married and you realize there are other things that you that kind of get on your nerves a little bit. Both of you do to each other. So then I started realizing that the differences that we have make us how we, you know, balance us both out. And so... So I wrote this song, it's called As Long As I'm With You. Mm-hmm. you like warmer weather and the blowing of an ocean breeze. I think nothing's better than the color of an autumn leaf. But I don't mind if you don't mind a different point of view. Cause it's my fun doing life as long as I'm with you. Well, you like five-star restaurants and wearing finer things. I like a plate of tater tots and a worn-out pair of jeans. But I don't mind if you don't mind a different point of view. Cause it's mighty fine doing life as long as I'm with you. Take the fast lane, and I like to take it slow. But as long as we're together, there's no telling how far we'll go. But I don't mind if you don't mind a different point of view. Cause it's mighty fine doing life as long as I'm with you. Yes, it's mighty fine doing life as long as I'm with you.
Hey, if you just tuned in, my name is Anthony Quails. I'm doing a Quarantunes and Dune for the Wood Songs in Dalton. So I'll sing you a song I wrote. So a few weeks ago when we first started this lockdown, I think we were like a week or two in, and I started thinking about all the stuff that's on Facebook, the news, and it can get overwhelming. And a lot of times you feel like you're not doing anything at all. You're not having an impact, or you're not doing enough, or everything you're doing is just for naught. So I wrote this song. It's called It Won't Always Be This Way. Hope you guys enjoy it. Life is looking like a TV show. Every day's the same episode. How's it gonna end? No one knows. Nothing to do but watch it all unfold. Everything feels like an awful joke. Everybody's numb, acting comatose. Walking around in the same old clothes. Cause staying at home is the only hope. While everybody's dying to communicate and praying that their neighbor won't pass away, all I'm trying to find is a little faith today that it won't always be this way. I heard they're printing up a bunch of cash, trying to put a stop to the market crash. I wonder if they're gonna wanna take it back or force me to claim it on my income tax. While everybody says we should isolate, lock all the doors, pull down the shades, all I'm trying to find is a little faith today that it won't always be this way. And I'm lying in bed with all this stuff running through my head like a semi-truck, keeping me awake cause I just don't trust that anything I'm doing is good enough. So I think, and I'll say this, especially at a time like now where we're going through this, just a lot of uncertainty, you may question, what's the purpose? What's your purpose? Or someone may. And so I thought I'd sing a song for you guys. It's called There's a Reason That You're Breathing. And this song is off my new record as well. I lost a really good friend of mine 3 years ago. And this album is actually dedicated to him. I lost a friend of mine to suicide in 2017. It's really hard. And I don't know. I think I'm learning more and more that that's actually touches a lot more people than I had ever realized. And so I wrote this song for him as a tribute to him. So I'll sing you the song. Are you thinking of leaving just to remedy your pain? Convince the ache you're feeling will never go away. Well, before you pull the trigger, I hope you find that's not the case. And know that if you go, how the world is gonna change. There's a reason that you're breathing, and if only you could see that life's a gift you've been given with every second you receive. It isn't crazy to believe you were made for greater things. There's a reason that you're breathing. Though some have gone before you, feeling just the same. Suffering in silence, but you don't have to live that way. Take a step back from the edge, long enough it's clear to see. The lens through which you're looking hides the ground beneath your feet. Yes, there's a reason that you're breathing, and if only you could see that life's a gift you've been given with every second you receive. It isn't crazy to believe you were made for greater things. Yes, there's a reason that you're breathing. In the face of all the chaos they might be running through your mind, I hope there is a moment when you're strong enough to find. There's a reason that you're breathing, and if only you could see, then life's a gift you've been given with every second you receive. It isn't crazy to believe you were made for greater things. There's a reason that you're breathing. There's a reason that you're breathing. You guys so much. We'll do just a couple other do a couple other songs, and then I'll let you guys go. Hope you guys enjoy the rest of your day and the rest of the weekend. Hope you find some rest and some relaxation. So I wrote this song, and it's I wrote the song in 2011. Oh, thanks, Earl. I appreciate you tuning in, man. So early one morning in 2011, I was driving into downtown Chattanooga, and there was a low fog on the ground. And the title for this song just kind of landed in my lap. So I wrote this song. It's about a man in a yellow suit. Small town Nebraska, where the corn and cotton grow, when your brother was your neighbor about 3 miles down the road. Hadn't seen a decent rain in at least a couple years. When you visit that city, there's a story that you'll hear. You see, the crops had withered up back in 1948, when the farmers gathered at the church praying for rain. Most were in their overalls and those dusty worn-out boots, but one old man came dressed in a yellow rubber suit. You gotta have hope for the harvest, acres of faith when you go to the Father and ask in Jesus' name. Expect that He'll deliver when you bow your head to pray. Yes, He is faithful to answer when you got acres of faith. Well, 30 minutes in, and the pew began to shake with the sound of that old man as he began to pray. And he shouted out, "Amen," and stumbled to his feet, put on his rubber hat, and stepped out into the street. You gotta have hope for the harvest, acres of faith when you go to the Father and ask in Jesus' name. Expect that He'll deliver when you bow your head to pray. Yes, He is faithful to answer when you got acres of faith. First came the thunder, then came the rain, filling the rivers and flooding the banks. But to this day, none have a clue where went that old man in that yellow rubber suit. You gotta have hope for the harvest, acres of faith when you go to the Father and ask in Jesus' name. Expect that He'll deliver you when you bow your head to pray. Yes, He is faithful to answer when you got acres of faith. I'd sing you one more song, if that's all right, and we'll, unless somebody has a request or something, then we'll, I can do that. So anyway, again, my name is Anthony Quails. Thank you to the sponsors of Woodsong's concert series in Dalton. Thank you to Tom Brown for asking me to perform and entertain you guys today. this is a song I wrote with a really good friend of mine. His name is Drake for Lanier. He lives in Nashville. He and his wife used to live in Chattanooga. And he and I are really good friends, and one of the people I love to write with the most. And we've written a few songs together. Every time we do, it's just fantastic. I just enjoy it. And so I was really feeling a certain way and a few years back, and I asked him if he would help me write a song. So they used to live just a few blocks from where I worked at. So one day after work, I think, or maybe I went over and I had him help me flesh out this song. And so I thought I'd share it with you guys. It's the last track off my new album. It's called It's Okay to Have Nothing to Say. Talk when there's nothing to say. Has it proven a difficult habit to break? And you know that confession is just empty words when half of the lesson is yet to be learned. They say actions speak louder than words ever will. If that's true, then it goes without saying. In a world full of sound, is there a place to be found where it's okay to have nothing to say? Is it possible that we're both? Is it possible that we're just all insecure? And the sound of the silence is hard to endure. So you say to yourself, time and again, that silence is golden, but hope it still ends. They say actions speak louder than words ever will. If that's true, would you mind please explaining? In a world full of sound, is there a place to be found where it's okay to have nothing to say? Do you pour out your heartache, praying to God, and unload the questions and problems you got, and hope that he's listening, afraid that he's not, scared that the ceiling is just where it stops? They say actions speak louder than words ever will. If that's true, what am I truly saying? In a world full of sound, is there a place to be found where it's okay to have nothing to say? It's okay to have nothing. Thank you guys so much for tuning in today and joining me in my spare bedroom. So it's been great. You know, to those of you who just tuned in, you can go back and watch this. I think they're going to post it on their Facebook page. Be well. God bless. And thank you guys so much for tuning in.
On Scenic Roots, that was Anthony Quayles on Quarantunes from the Wood Songs in Dalton Facebook page. This is WUTC.
I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Thanks, as always, to our producers, Haley Solomon, Carly Dodson, Elena Nourabadi, Connor Brown, and Will Davis. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.